Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great week for It's the Real.
How could it not be another great week for It's the Real?
I mean, I could come up with, like, some ways off the top of my head that it couldn't be a good week. We could have gotten the swine flu. That would have been a bad week for It's the Real.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could have gotten, like, a flat tire.
That would also be a bad week for It's the Real.
We could have gotten stuck underground on a train, which is more
no,
likely.
No, you know what, though? That happened to us, and that still didn't deter a good week.
Right, so you know what? I don't think there's anything but a good week for It's the Real.
Every week is good for It's the Real.
Yeah.
This past week, we had a great episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real, starting off with Kamaya, the Oakland rapper who we're so fond of. Also on that episode, we had our friend Fafu.
Yes, Fafu used to be the drum programmer for Prince.
The late, great Prince. Also, this week, you had a pretty horrific experience at the barber.
Well, first of all, I don't like talking to my barber.
Just generally speaking.
Not a thing I do. I just like to sit there, take it in, and...
Well, but you go there, and the first thing you say, and maybe the only thing you say is, like, cut it short inside.
I say, give me a number two fade,
and then
keep it long on top.
Long on top. So, simple instructions.
Yeah. I feel like I'm very clear.
Well,
I don't want to confuse them.
I mean, okay, so you go across the street because why? It's easy, right?
It's easy.
And it's cheap, and this is a... Barber slash...
They sell gold.
They
also buy gold.
Big sign.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, it's not the most reputable place, I guess.
I mean, unless you're looking to, you know, your haircuts in gold.
I don't know what their Yelp reviews are, if they're better for buying gold or for getting haircuts.
You should really check, and let's circle back next week. But anyway, you went there.
I went there, and I sit down in the last seat. The guy came out from behind the gold counter and was like, hey... So, what are we doing today? I said number two fade, keep it long on top.
But you don't recognize the guy. This isn't your normal guy, as far as you know.
Well, I walked in there, and everybody who had been working there has now been fired.
For good reason, I'm sure.
Probably because they don't sell enough gold.
Yeah.
And the guy starts cutting my hair, and about halfway through, he does this thing where he slaps the scissors against his comb. And I'm like, oh my God, I remember him.
Just like in a movie, he gives that signal...
And a month before, 6 weeks before, he'd given me a shitty haircut, and I was like...
That same slap of the comb and the scissors.
Very intense, and I was so like, oh no! Like,
so the light bulb went off right above your head, and then he cut it off.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I still gave him a good tip, because I'm...
Did you really?
Yeah.
Well, but, so you come home...
Pissed.
Not in a good mood. You walk in, and I look over from my room, and I see you, and you go... I look like
a Russian nightclub, and my name is Dimitri.
Well, how you feel now?
Less like Dimitri.
This week on the podcast, we have our friend and the phenomenal writer, Mary H.K. Choi. She's written for Complex and MTV and Wired and the New York Times.
And XXL Magazine, most importantly.
And she worked at XXL Magazine under the great Elliot Wilson. Who you all know from Rap Radar. He was at XXL for a long time. She talks about that. She talks about growing up in Texas. She talks about her relationship with her parents and how she's found some sort of emotion from her father because of emojis. If people want to listen to more of these type of podcasts, where can they go, Jeff?
They can always go and try and find our SoundCloud. It's so easy to find.
It's also open 24 hours a day.
Yeah, it never closes. SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time. Also on iTunes, if you search for It's the Real, ITSTHEREAL, it is the first result.
Whoa, look at
our result. Yeah.
Shouts to us.
There's no other It's the Real. There are several of the reals, but we are the only It's the Real.
Also, if you type in like A Waste of Time, our stuff will show up. So that's good.
That's good.
It's great job by us and everyone who's running our internets. So, I don't know. You want to get into this podcast?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. G5, a.k.a. Battleship Sunk.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Ready for War, a.k.a. 52 Cars.
Hi, this is Mary H.K. Choi, a.k.a. Meow.
Damn, this is a waste of time, but this is the real.
Whoa, this is like so raucous and exciting.
Rock is like a billboard.
Yeah,
record label. Mary, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Good.
I can't believe you're inviting me into your abode.
Well, thanks for coming all the way up here.
Yeah, it's a rarefied vibe.
Yeah. Some people, it's not such a problem. Like Bodega Bams lives uptown. Like Smoke Dizzle lives uptown. For you, you're coming from far away.
I was shopping earlier. I bought Raf Simmons. Don't judge me. And so I had to like bring trail mix and maybe hit an ATM before I came up here. I was like, I don't know what's going to be. Yeah, but I'm here now.
Is there any other reason that you would find yourself on the Upper West Side?
Well, actually, my friend Lang Whitaker, who is phenomenal and makes the best fried chicken, entices me uptown with his chicken. So that's the last time I was here. Yeah. But it's so pretty. And this is like the perfect New York porn weather-wise.
It really
is. Yeah, it's like really woody.
Do you follow Lior Cohen on Snapchat?
I do not.
Okay. Oh, big mistake.
I know.
Yeah, but I did see him recently at the Crown stage after his health scare.
He's back on his feet. Although he got into a taxi cab accident like yesterday.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We need to like have a keep Lior inside.
Yeah,
sort
it's
of.
All. It really is like Thermopylae. 300 is real. That's crazy. But yeah, he looked wonderful. And is he coming here to here?
We're working on it.
Yeah, well, I know that was the pursuit. And actually, when he fell ill, I was just like, everything is like in turmoil, including his health. I mean, let's be real. Like,
but the number one concern is that he won't be on our podcast.
I was a little bit, that was top three for me. I'm not going to lie to you.
But no, we're working on it.
We are working on it. Yeah. So very cool. Stay tuned.
Yeah, business is, it's not booming yet, but like it's on its way. Like, we're meeting all of our objectives.
Lior is definitely the grail.
Who is your grail?
Yeah, you have a podcast.
Excellent question. Living or dead? Just kidding. Posthumous job talk would be really just like necro and weird. You know, I've been thinking about it a lot. I don't know. It might be a fashion person. It might be a Raf, obviously.
Would you wear Raf while interviewing
Raf? No, that's just like, that's like maybe I'd wear like Raf secretly underneath, you know, just so I know, like as a totem, you know, but you can't wear someone's face on a t-shirt to meet them unless it's like, you know, Pablo.
I thought about that. So DJ Khaled is on the Formation tour now and he's been snapping from the stage wearing the tour shirt there.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. But
that's
like,
is that two faces? Is it a vase? What am I looking at? The reverb. Yeah,
it's a vibe is what it is.
It is a vibe. It's true.
Wait, is he wearing the Boycott Beyonce one?
No, not that one. Not yet.
Okay.
He's wearing like a We the Best with the tour dates all on the back.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's what I love about him. Everything he churns out is so immediate. Like he says something and he can like memeify it IRL.
That's why I think like his whole album should just be like all of his sayings, like as titles.
Right, totally.
Like he goes to Future and Jay-Z and is be like, I don't know.
Something cloth talk?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Yeah. See, but you guys act like he has like real like thought into this. I feel like it just like flows through him.
No, I think he is a vessel. I think he is definitely, you know, it's a calling. You can't just like wake up and have that be you. You got to climb the mountain, weather the storm.
That's right. Yeah. Walk through the
pathway of more success. Pathway of more success. Totally. Yeah.
So you have a podcast called Hey Cool Job.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Thank you. That's really kind.
Do you want to do it with like regularity or is it just sort of whenever it...
Is that shade for how like infrequent my podcast is?
I'm saying I enjoy it a lot and I would prefer to download it weekly.
We are more regular insofar as I believe that the time span between Asa Akira coming on and the next one was like 3 months? Question mark? Shrug emoji. But yeah, I mean, we record monthly now at Red Bull. And it is true. I feel somewhat stymied. I think I would love to do it weekly. I would love to do it biweekly. I am talking to a number of people who are expressing interest in making that happen. But, you know, I would love that. I think that the sort of impetus of me doing the podcast period is that I'm really bad at jobs. And it's like this thing where it's like almost like, are you my mommy? In that like, I'm like, do you have my job? So I want to sort of figure out more about it. And I think that there's kind of a lack of transparency in between what your idea of someone's job is versus what the actual reality is.
Totally.
Like, I love the fact that I could talk to a porn star who also happens to be a friend of mine, who also happens to be an author, and be like, yo, are you a 1099? Because that sounds nightmarish to me.
So, yeah, right.
So you fuck first, you get paid, and then you got an invoice for it.
You
like
get
net
paid
one?
First.
No, you don't get paid first.
Oh, really?
It was clarified. That is another profession, she told me. You're supposed to put it on the bedside table in another profession. No, you get paid same day. But, you know, there are situations in which you do invoice.
I've been doing it wrong this entire time.
It's true.
I've been paying first.
Aww.
Yeah.
Next time. Now, you know, the more you learn. Yeah, it's true.
Our aunt... spent her whole
life.
No, it's not a porn star.
No, she's just trying to make it in the business. Yeah.
But she's gone through like a trillion jobs. Like she was never settled into just like one career. Our dad worked for IBM and worked for Citibank. Like he was a company man.
Right, right, right.
Our aunt, our mom's sister, worked for like a billion different places, was never settled.
It's so funny. It's like almost like a go-see. Not in that I'm a model, just in that I will sniff anybody. But someone's like, you want to like break bread and have a coffee? I'm like, sure. You know, I love to know what's going on. I love to know who's hiring. It's actually really funny because I feel like I'm on the mind squad for people who are hiring people. So there is that HR aspect to it just because I don't want a job ever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been really interesting to talk about just like to get an idea of like how much people make, because it's like you never really find out.
Right.
And you know, you have an idea. Like I was just talking to Noah Callahan Bever, who just sold Complex. And it's like people, I feel like we're really jaded by this notion of people making, you know, putting M's on the table, so to speak, or whatever. But it's like when it's like someone, you know, who's been working for a decade and then being able to sort of ask that follow up, it's like, yeah, was it nerve wracking? And it's just like, yeah, I didn't sleep at all. And da, 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 da. And so it becomes sort of like more of a real thing. And I think that that dialogue is lacking, especially because a lot of people make up their jobs. You know, people invent shit all the time. People
in this business?
Yeah, yeah, in this apartment?
Yeah. True. No, so this is like everyone is such a multi-hyphenate. And so I like just to be able to break that down. And I've just been interviewing my friends, and I've started getting a lot of interest in terms of people who like do scoring for certain TV shows and stuff like that. And so those are also conversations I'm really interested in.
So you've been like a writer for magazines and the internet and for TV. And, you know, what do you... You don't like any of that.
No. Everyone who has ever hired me and given money to me is the best, and I'm very grateful. No, I mean, I do love... It's tough. I feel like, you know, and I think that you guys know this, again, as multi-hyphenates who are sitting here with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Writing is interesting because it is it's the universal donor. As a verb goes, it's so, like, typo negative. It's so plug and play with a lot of industries. And if you are... you know, peripatetic in your interests, you know, aka spastic, you can try on a lot of hats. And it's really nice. And the really great thing is that I've been doing it now for 13, 14 years. And at this point, I still have nuanced problems to solve. Like, I have yet to write a feature script that I like, that has that sort of like page 4, save the cat, page 55, looking at death's door, you know, all those like stops that I, you know, that sounds very sort of empty and algorithmic, but it's like writing a pop song. You can't just write a hook because you decided to.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that I've been exploring this and still learning that is like really fun, and I won't tire of it, and I probably won't settle on one thing.
Well, when you worked for like MTV, for example,
yeah,
giant building, mm-hmm, giant company, yeah, how did that feel, like, going to work every day and swiping past, like, the...
I mean...
And was it any different from Complex?
Well, Complex, when I worked there, was very small. Like, it was, like, 25 people. I understand now it's, like, 150, and they have a big, sexy building in Midtown. But MTV was exciting because I had a corporate card, and it had my logo on it. So, like, MTV, and it had other logos on it. And my mother, who is a Korean person, like myself, was like, I have heard of this company. You know, she was so cute. Like, I remember when I was the managing editor of Hip Hop Soul, you know, after I had been at XXL for a while,
yeah,
you know, R.I.P. Harris, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But, and she was just like, I was looking for the R&B magazine that you now do, and I can't find it anywhere. She lives in Texas. And I was like, yeah, we're a newsstand giant, but you're not going to find it in Texas. And so... this was a company that she had heard of. And so that was very gratifying to her because she's very shallow. And, you know, and so she's like, my church people have heard of you. That's great. So that was exciting. And there are perks that are very real. Like you work past a certain hour and a town car materializes. You know, these things are really nice. Like I knew where the snack drawers were. These are very important to me if you know me personally. But I couldn't get over that the sort of way the email structure was that like they could tell if you were at your desk based on the activity of your email on your desktop and your phone usage.
Yo.
And that freaks me out. Not to be like an 80s baby where like the building turns on Tom Selleck and the elevator tries to kill you, but shit like that really is demoralizing to me. And this was, you know, this was before they were working out of like Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the thick of it. This is like going to 40 Deuce. Which is like bumping into like 18 Elmos. You know what I mean? You're like, what? How is this my life?
But Times Square is so beautiful in the summer.
It's true. And it smells so good. And the tourists really understand that they shouldn't just like stop walking the fuck out of nowhere. Like 38 deep. Yeah.
Did you leave the building to get lunch, by the way?
No, I just went to the lodge.
The lodge, yeah.
I was that person who, like, by the end of my tenure there was like, oh, I don't even have antibodies to go outside. Like, I am climate controlled. I'm like veal.
But you were missing out on Guy Fieri's restaurant and bubblegum shrimp.
Fieri.
I'm sorry.
That's like Jada Dolores.
I like speaking his native language.
They are both on the same level, by the way.
Totally. I like the way they say rigot. No, and so, but the thing is, I did learn a lot there. It's kind of like going to college. I talk about college a lot on my podcast because I want to know if like the sort of staggering levels of debt are necessarily worth it for people, especially now. And college does teach you, if nothing else, how to navigate a bureaucracy. And I think that there's true value in that. I mean, I went to UT in Austin.
Yeah.
And that's a huge fucking school.
Yeah.
And so just even trying to get your credits and shit is like a uphill situation. And so I do think corporate structures, when you learn how to like ingratiate yourself to multiple people at once, and when you can learn how to manage up and manage down, and you understand how the sort of fiefdoms and cabals work.
Totally.
I think there's a huge value in that. Because at the end of the day, even if you're a freelancer, you will descend upon a situation where you have to navigate something like that. And if you have some sort of knowledge of it, it helps.
Our mutual friend, Miss Info, has said to us that she thinks she has a 1-year-old son, Max, and
so cute. Yeah.
So big.
Yeah.
So big.
And Norm. Yeah.
But she said by the time he's college age, college might not even be relevant in her eyes. She's like very open to the idea.
Also, Minya is future as fuck. Like, I feel like she's like such a soothsayer. You know, like, you know, she used to be the gossip queen, but I also think it's because she's just fucking clairvoyant.
Totally.
Yeah. So like, I agree with that. I think that there is something sort of modular to learning these days. And I was blessed with going to a public school. And so like, and my parents paid for it. I'm very forthright about that. Like, and I went for a long time, for almost 5 years.
Wait, oh, really?
So wait, okay. So,
but what's the rush, you know?
True, I'm just late.
So you're from Texas originally?
No, I actually, I'm Korean. Yes. I was born in Korea. And then before I turned one, I believe I was 11 months old, I moved to Hong Kong, which sounds like I was carrying a briefcase and just tiny, just getting on a plane. No,
maybe
my,
you were.
Yeah, my entire family moved to Hong Kong. And so I grew up in Hong Kong, which is a British, which at the time was under British rule. And so that was pre-handover in 1997. And then I lived there until the time I was 14. And then my father, apropos of nothing, unilaterally decided to buy a house in Texas.
No.
Where there, in Texas?
In Universal City, which is a suburb outside of San Antonio.
Universal City sounds like a fake Chinese
place.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. No, it's like, it sounds like a fake ass place. And I was just like, you know, it's like that thing where like the building falls and you like pop in through the window. It's like everything's like 2D. No, and so he bought a house and we moved there. That's just where I was for a couple years in high school.
Did you bring your briefcase?
No, I did not. Yes. Wait, it was a Goyard.
Why?
Because it was big and it was safe and it was close to the police precinct.
Wow.
Like, there was really no other...
But why America?
Or why Texas?
America was going to be it anyway. Like, we had our green card at that point. We had been petitioning for it because I have a grip of family members in L.A., like every Korean human.
Mm-hmm.
Studio City. Universal City.
Yeah, close. No, and so I had, you know, my mother's entire side of the family lived in L.A., and I think the prospect of moving to L.A. was seductive, but my dad was just like, you know what? I'm not really trying to live near, like, all 13 of you guys' sisters and stuff. So, yeah, we moved dead smack dab in the middle of America.
And do you have any siblings?
I do. I have an older brother. We're Irish twins. He's a year older than me, but less than a year.
Mm.
And he is a comic book artist.
And how was the move for each of you guys? Because that's prime time to not want to move.
Yeah, I was dating a really dishy rugby player at the time. I was like a precocious person. Which is
how old was
funny.
He? He was 35.
Yeah, professional rugby player.
Totally.
He played for
Scotland. Yeah, totally. He's Welsh. Like, yeah, his thigh circumference was... No, he was...
He rolled up after high school and like, you got
bitch,
his car.
Get in. Yeah, totally. No, he was 18. It's true. And so I was dating this guy. It was very exciting, and I had a ton of friends and like all that stuff. And so I was not trying to move. And actually, the thing that was just the most vivid is we landed in America after like a trillion hour flight, and I, you know, and the fucking airport was so toy. I was just like, this is not, this is kidding. And as we were driving to, you know, the sort of suburb that we would eventually sort of live in, someone was just like, oh, there's the movie theater. And it was this light in the middle of fucking darkness. And I was like, holy shit, what podunk fuckery is this? And so it was really, really jarring, but it was also really informative. I think that there is something to moving to the most American America that your parents can conceive of that was interesting. You know, so like, I don't like football, but like, I will watch the shit out of like, you know, Clear Eyes, Full Heart. Yeah, just like, and I really do love that there is not like kinship to Texans, because like half of them are so racist and weird, but I love Texas as a place. You know, like I learned how to read a lot of books in Texas when I was by myself a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'd been really popular growing up, and then I just knew no one. And that was actually really good as a hard reset. I actually, not to say like all fathers of girls who are dating rugby players when they're 13, 14 should do this, but it made me reprioritize. And I think, you know, truthfully, my wanting to become a writer probably began germinating then. Because prior to moving to America, I was in private school in Hong Kong with like, you know, really yuppie kids, like expat kids, and they were very, very moneyed and they were very like well-schooled. And comparatively, I was dumb. But then I moved to Texas and it was like I was a genius. No, like all my grades, dead ass, became A's and B's. Like they just, you know, rounded up.
Yeah.
And I just read a lot, and then I was just all in AP classes and I was like, oh, I'm smart here. And I didn't know that.
What was your style like going into Texas, and then how did it change?
Yeah, did you? Oh, God. Is that when you started wearing all black because the light had come out of you?
Totally. I don't see color anymore. No, I was actually really. I mean, Hong Kong was like pretty stylish. It's in Asia, obviously. Why am I telling you that Hong Kong is in Asia? No, I mean, Asia is just fast. It's just good at like really quick adoption, mm-hmm. and so a lot of the silhouettes would have hit, you know, New York a year later, except that I was in Texas. So I was on like a 4-year lag. And I remember the first day of school, and I had very, very long hair then too. And I wore these sort of burnt umber velvet like bell bottoms. And I wore these platforms, and I wore this very like fitted vintage Kenzo shirt that had like little mushrooms and like flowers on it. And everyone else was wearing jerboa, because like that was the time. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and everyone was wearing like K-Swiss shoes, like the white on white things. And they called them tennies. And I was so wildly out of place. And so the next.
But were you a star?
No. I mean, it was confusing for them because, you know, I started going to school there, and then my brother started going to school there. And so there was like no other Asian people. And they were like, so you are all related. And I was like, we're really not, you know? So it was a thing where it's just like, I just stopped speaking. I used to also have a very thick British accent when I moved there. And
like a Cockney accent.
Yeah. Actually, it was like Birmingham. Yeah, total Brummy. No. And so I stood out enough in that way. And so I would say that I didn't get popular until the year after, when I just started putting out like crazy. No,
you were a freshman or a sophomore?
I was a sophomore because
you were too smart to be a freshman.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, I was supposed to be a junior, but had my brother been a junior, he wouldn't have been ready to acclimate enough to become a senior and then go to college and graduate. But yeah, I went to college in Texas too after that at UT.
Was there any thought that you would go elsewhere?
No, because I didn't want to go to college at all. And so with
what would you have done if you didn't go to college?
Smoke weed every day. No, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to move to New York. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember thinking, I want to go to NYU. This was like the dream. And of course, like tuition, even back then, was so laughable. My parents, they work in the service industry. They were like, this is adorable. You know, like we move you here and now you're really confused. No. And conversely, at the time, like going to UT, I think it's like, you know, a semester was like a couple thousand. And so I was so lackadaisical and sort of like not fussed with college in either way anyway. So I was just like, let me go to the cheap one that I can already get into because my grades are high. And it's just like, boom.
And socially, like, did you still not care about football? Because now you're like...
so much pressure.
Yeah.
No, I
mean... Epicenter of it.
No, I still don't care about football.
Do you hate Oklahoma?
I do. Fuck that. What the fuck is a Sooner, really, though? Yeah, I mean, there are things that just are in there. I don't drink sweet tea or anything, but I'm very barbecue snobby.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
So you won't go...
I don't like a Carolina situation. I was like, what is that? It's just like pulp.
How far is Austin from San Antonio?
It's like an hour.
An hour drive.
Yeah, so it's like, boop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
Totally. And so, you know, I went there, graduated. I actually majored in textiles and apparel, so I majored in fashion.
Whoa.
Yeah. Not whoa.
No, but like, okay, if your parents
Neurology.
Are...
Neurology. yeah.
No, but were your parents like...
Dismayed?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. They were like, that's a hobby. but similarly, they're kind of like, they didn't even come to my high school graduation. They're very uninvolved with certain things. I mean, that makes them sound cruel. It's more that, and I get home after high school graduation. And I'm like, the fuck, guys. And you know, they were just kind of like, big fucking whoop. You graduated high school. Wow. Like, what do you want, a parade? Like, of course you graduated high school.
Did you want a parade?
I did look, you want a parade. Like, my white friends were like, my mom bought out this entire restaurant.
Yeah.
Come, dine. My parents were just like, oh.
Did they have ads in the back of the yearbook?
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. They did at our school, and like that was a big thing for like parents to buy. Like,
I thought you were implying whether or not my parents would have participated in something like that. No, it was a possibility. They just never did it because they're bastards. So they weren't that involved in schooling for me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I low-key think they thought I was just kind of like weird and would do an art thing or something. Mm-hmm. So they were like, fashion's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I moved to New York, I had interned at Saks. I was actually working at Saks Fifth Avenue in the Armani Collezioni division. ask me anything about Khadi, the fabric. No, and so...
Is this in polyester? Is this a rayon blend?
That actually hurts my feelings. I was like, no, it's like a crepe, but it's really different. So, yeah, I did fashion, and I was supposed to go through the sort of buying program, like the corporate thing, and I kind of just lost my mind, and I decided that that's the last thing I wanted to do. And so I went into magazines. I went into Mass Appeal, because Condé wouldn't hire you unless you had previous experience. But internships wouldn't let you come intern unless it was for college credit, and I had already graduated, and I was just like, I had thought this through beautifully. And yeah. So I worked at Mass Appeal, and it was dope. It was,
and you'd been reading Mass Appeal before you actually started working there, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Well, no, I mean,
graffiti germane to my interest. Culture.
When I graduated from college and I was like, oh, I want to work for magazines, and I started reaching out to all these editors, and they would say, oh, do you read our magazine? And I would lie, and I would say, yes, I love your magazine. Mm-hmm. They would say, well, what do you like about our magazine? I'd be like, oh, you know.
The covers.
Yeah, the covers are amazing.
The font is so good.
The length of the articles
is
nice.
I like the adjacency of this ad.
I like how the paper is from a good stock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the LRG ad.
But yeah, so I didn't get any jobs at magazines.
Really?
Well, I also didn't apply.
And now you're fine. Good job, because let me tell you what happened to magazines.
I just woke up in 2016.
That happened to me twice. The magazines really happened to me a couple times over the years.
Did you keep your parents like in the loop as to what was going on with you?
No, I moved to America. I mean, I moved to New York without telling them. So I just had two suitcases, and I just appeared here. And my friend Susie, her father, who was working at Marc Jacobs, her dad co-signed our apartment, and I was like, woohoo! And then I just never went home.
Whoa.
Yeah. You got to be like that with Asian parents.
Well, how
sometimes.
Long did it take for them to show up and be like, hey?
Oh, they've never visited me in New York to this day.
What?
We don't talk. No. we have a very loving relationship. It's just like there are certain things that you have to train parents to realize.
Wow.
Yeah, you just got to pull the cord. Yeah. And so, yeah, they're extremely supportive. Now, they still really don't have an idea of what it is that I do exactly, but I think that it's great. I think that everyone's comfortable with that.
That's good.
Yeah.
We, every time we go to Thanksgiving, it's, you know, the relatives at the far ends of the you know, family tree, those are the ones who don't get what we do, and that's always like the situation where if we did something for MTV or like we sold a show to MTV, that's
thing,
when they're like, oh, I get it.
Right, and there's like, oh, I always knew there was something special about you. But a lot of people won't understand what we do.
Well, did you go to your high school reunion?
No. I'm really not that good at preserving
memories.
Friend, where am I? No. It's just kind of like I have a very, very select few friends. And that's just what that is. And I don't do really well with ancillary humans. And so, like, I think the joy of it, like in your case, going on the Rihanna tour and then going straight to your high school reunion,
yeah,
that kind of stuff doesn't make me happy. So I just don't participate.
Is that only because of the scheduling of your high school reunion? If it had been right after we were on the Rihanna plane,
then I totally would have gone. It would have been so thin like you. No, I mean, gosh, remember Rihanna plane? No, I didn't go to my high school reunion. I don't think I will. I can't imagine going to a college reunion. Just not into it.
Yeah. Like our mom, like she, there's a milestone one for her, college or high school, one of them. And she was like, she sort of wanted to go and then she didn't want to go, but she signed up for like essentially what is their Facebook, you know, for all those people from their grade, just so the people would know she was still alive. Like that was,
that's nice. That's a courtesy check-in. I totally do one of those. Yeah, ding, ding, alive. Still not attending. Fuck that.
Do you have those random people from high school hitting you up on like social media?
And
they're like, I remember you.
No.
You had a British accent.
I know. Lies. Yeah.
The beef eater uniform. No?
Yeah, totally. The reverse Tina Turner. What is this now? No, I don't really talk to a lot of high school people. I don't really talk to a lot of college people. I don't really talk to a lot of people. but I do, I have my best friend.
Susie?
She's been my best friend since we were like four. And that's my human. And then similarly, like I have a friend, you know, who I knew in college, and that's also my human. But like, other than those two people, I can't imagine sitting in a room with like all the fluff would make me that happy. But yeah, I mean, I do look forward. I mean, the other thing is, it's like when you do, like you guys sell a scripted MTV show and a press release goes out, you know, all the people like clamoring and saying, hi, I knew you when, like, you know, that's nice, but I don't know. Like, I just, maybe it's that I just haven't had that moment yet. Maybe I haven't been able to rub it in sufficiently to where it would...
You've had some very big moments throughout your life and career. You have, yeah.
Is that just coded for, you're so old? Hey, there have been achievements.
There must have been things that, just, that you've been happy about. I don't know. It's been a very long time.
Probability alone. Yeah, totally.
What was your first interview that you were like happy about?
God, they're all running together. A kaleidoscope of famous faces. I don't know, but...
Is it this one?
I think so. No, it's funny, though, because it's actually... I'm scrolling so far back that it's microfiche, but some of the early interviews that I'd ever did was at XXL, and it would be for, like, the sex issue. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, me asking, like, Chris and Neef if they prefer, like, doggy style or froggy style. And so those are quite indelibly marked into my head, but...
Wait, how did they respond?
I do not recall the answers, no. I think I wasn't looking at their faces.
Oh, you did it in person?
Yeah, it was in person.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a lot. And I believe like there were questions about skeeting, because I think that was the era.
Another favorite piece that you've written is the Rihanna piece from the Fader.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Where she wasn't exactly...
There. Which is the same thing as when we were on the plane with her.
Yeah, it was very consistent for me.
But I thought you did a remarkable job in shaping the whole thing.
No, I mean, the thing is, I have had a lot of time to meditate on Rihanna. I wrote her first cover. And
what year was that?
Oh, don't make me. I think it was 2007.
But you were only 17.
It's
so,
true.
You know,
we were both 17. Yeah, it was really great. I was like, twins. Let's be blood sisters. So I did have...
You and Rihanna and Melissa Ford.
Totally. Yeah. And, Jen Rosales. And so, like, I loved seeing how she changed. And I do think that there was sort of something meditative to be said on the thing. And I really, really love how vaunted our notion of her is. And, like, I do love, like, you know, even someone, like, as beloved as Beyoncé can be quite divisive. But... Rihanna is less so. And that's interesting to me. Like, everybody wants to believe that they would be best friends with her and that somehow that would be reciprocated. And I think that that is a really fascinating energy to be able to channel. And you talk about, like, who's your favorite interview? Who's, like, your... Like, that's what I talk about, like, fame changing. And I do think it's really interesting that she is such a projection of, like, all women who think they're, like, killing it. And that's really powerful. And to harness that, you know, at this young age and having had the level of output she has had, like, that's really interesting to look at.
Yeah, she's honestly, so Beyonce puts out Lemonade and it's such a powerful pro-women thing. And mm-hmm. she stays married to Jay, regardless of how contrived or not contrived right. the storyline is. That's her empowerment from her point of view. Rihanna is the type of person who loves guys and then leaves them and gives no shits about them and moves forward. And that's her idea of empowerment. And I think that those two women are showing pretty amazing things.
Yeah. And, but the thing about Rihanna is that, like, it's not just like, oh, look at me. I'm so, you know, the men are so disposable. Cause I think that that is kind of a it's a played out thing. It feels very 90s. It feels very like Cosmopolitan, Sex in the City. And like her thing is more, I think she just sort of thinks about how awesome she is in that context and what she can get out of it. And like, you know, whether that is a certain type of like corporal pleasure or if it's like another type of satisfaction. And also you have to think about it, like that's a lot of Rihanna songs, but like Rihanna's got ballads, man.
Right. No, but I'm talking about like if you see her, like I was like, I think we were all curious when the Travis Scott situation
right.
like bubbled up and it was just like, why him? I like him as a person sometimes.
I see myself
like,
in Travis Scott.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But like, it was curious to go from like a certain level of superstar to somebody who was not quite on that level.
Yeah, but you know what it is? It's like, come on. It's like, yo, he probably was like the only person that like hollered where he had like enough like gumption.
Right.
And just fucking like crazy balls where he was just like, you know what? Hey. And I'm sure she was just like, okay, fine, hey. And then it was just, I'm just going to keep doing this fanfic forever.
Right, yeah, yeah,
but
right.
like, he was probably just like very confident and she was probably receptive to it. Hmm. And then ta-da.
I mean, he's from Texas.
It's true. No, I mean, I think that, yeah, I think that that's ultimately just what you want. Someone who can talk to you like you're a normal person.
Is she a normal person?
No, I mean, actually, it's funny. I mean, no, I mean, and why would she be? My God. Right. But actually, I do have a funny Rihanna anecdote mm-hmm. in that, like, I remember when I was, LOL, I was writing Rita Ora's bio.
Wow.
And she had just come to New York, like, this was, like, very, very early. Like, she just quit her sneaker store job or something. And Rihanna was in the building. I forget which studio it is. And she was, we shared an elevator and we got up to the right floor and the thing was locked. And we were just waiting and she looked at me and she's like, are you the writer? And I didn't know what context it was. And this was also a really long time ago. This is before like Rihanna being as hugely famous as she is now. And she's like, are you the writer? And I said, I was confused. I was like, yeah, no, what are you? And she's like, are you the Rolling Stone writer? I was like, no. And then she switched off her eyes. And it was this really interesting thing where it was like almost like, not like sleep mode, but like a conservation of like her sparkle, glitter, magic energy. Because like she has that tractor beam famous head where it's like her eyes have eyes inside and they're lights, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so she switched them off and I was just like, oh, like, are you a person anymore? Like, I don't, like, your interactions with people are probably so weird already.
Yeah.
Right.
And this was, at this point, just, like, however many years after I'd interviewed her the first time. Because that was
she didn't even recognize you.
No, and I had no expectation that she would recognize me because I'm not a monster, can you imagine? Like, Rihanna, do you remember me?
You should have just, like, hugged her.
Like, girl, hey. Yeah. No, and I remember thinking that's interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I've met a lot of famous people with that same energy. Like, I would say that Justin Bieber has that energy. Leonardo DiCaprio has that energy.
Were you there when Rihanna and
no.
you just got there, in the middle and you were like,
I was
hey.
Like, hey, I really like Coachella too. This is nice. I like that hat. No, and you know, I think Alec Baldwin has the same lights. It's a weird light. They just turn it on and you're like, what the fuck? Like, my liver feels weird.
Can we talk about like horrible interview stories?
God. No, I'm embargoed. No, I mean, like, I've interviewed a lot of Hollywood people who are on the come up but don't break out, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because their one sheet is not gelled, so they don't know what to say about themselves. And so that's a little painful. But more often than not, it's really great because it's like you're just kind of sitting there deciding what
the press releases. But you know who I did love interviewing? I loved interviewing Khloe Kardashian.
I'm sure that was amazing.
When was that?
She's like so open.
She was, yeah, she's really, really open. This was, I don't, it's funny, it was in LA, so I'm like, what season was that? I was like, yeah. No, it was the same temperature. I have no idea when it was, but it was fairly recently. And
was this a cover story?
Yeah. So she was really, really great and really open and so funny. And I remember she was drinking a lot. She had actually come under some fire for drinking too much water because that's the amount of scrutiny that she's under. And so she was getting up to pee a lot. And this was like when she was like, she's already kind of like skinny and like really healthy. Those things I think are the same thing.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah. No, she'd lost all this weight and she looked great and she was very taut. And she had worked out that day. She'd like done like two workouts already and she was drinking a bunch of water. And she's like, I'm going to pee a lot. I'm so sorry. I'm not doing drugs. I'm leaving my bag here so you can see. And then she showed me her palms and she's like, I don't have. And I was just like, wow, like that's, I suppose that's your life. Like you just, everyone thinks you're being shady for no reason.
I just want to tell my horrible interview story, yeah, which please. I just remember because I was like trying to remember.
It's actually, it's like trying to remember a joke. You're like, when you're on the spot, you're like, I don't fucking know. Like,
well, I couldn't even remember the people's names. It was my best friend Greg Mayo's graduation
name.
Party. Real name.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was at his graduation party. So this is 2006. Wrap Up Magazine. And they asked me to interview Field Mob. They were like, okay, all you have to do is just get a list of their top five movies.
Oh, you're like, I got this.
I'm like, this is the easiest thing I have to do. So I go up. I leave his party. I go up to his bedroom. And I close the door. And I'm there. And I'm like really nervous because I'm bad on... at interviewing people. And
you have always said that to me and I don't know that I believe you.
I don't know.
Okay, whatever. Continue. Yeah. Field Mob phone. Go.
Yeah.
Movie.
We can talk more about that after. Yeah. But anyway, so but Field Mob, and so I have to ask them these questions and they're like, okay, we're patching you through. They're in the back of the Escalade. I'm like, great, so they're next to each other, like, you know, we can all get on the phone. And they couldn't name one movie that they enjoyed, let alone five. And so I'm just pitching movies.
You're
that
like,
I can
Goodfellas,
think of.
Good fellas. Scarface.
Like, I'm like, you guys must love Scarface. Yeah, and they're like, totally. Yeah, yeah. And then this is around the time that Crash had come out.
Oh, shit.
And they were signed to Ludacris's label, Disturbing the Peace. And so I'm like, you know, what else? You know, Ludacris was just in Crash. And they go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We like that movie. And I go, well, what's your favorite part? Because, like, there has to be
at least a blur. Two.
Yeah. And so they say, oh, we like whatever part the boss man was in. And so
that's hilarious, though. That's usable. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like,
Chris
great.
Bridges. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was just like what should have been maybe like a 5-minute interview was like 30 minutes of me just like
sweating.
Weeping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've definitely been there. Also, phone interview. Fuck. Can I say? I'm like, do these people still exist? This magazine that I interviewed Naomi Campbell on the phone.
Wow.
And that was, like, so pressure-filled because...
You were worried that she was going to throw her phone.
And then who would record then? You know, totally. No, she's also... She's a huge... You have to... I majored in fashion. Like, I loved...
Well, textiles, so...
Yeah, but, like, that whole, like, 90s, like, all of those photos. Just, like, the era of the supermodel. I mean, also, like, hello, like, I exhumed House of Style for MTV. That was, like, my entire job for a while. But so that era was really important to me. And I was really... And I don't get nervous during interviews, but I was really nervous. And it was a phoner, and her phone kept cutting in and out.
Wow.
And so that was like a really painful interview. And blessedly, what I had to cobble together was fairly easy because it was blurb based. But yeah, that was one of those sweaty moments. Or when you, oh, funny, the worst interview ever. Interviewed Rihanna, first cover, flew out to LA to do it. Tape got fucked up.
What do you do?
The tape era. I got on the phone with her and we had a phoner. She gave me another 55 minutes.
Jesus.
Really nice of her.
That's really nice.
Yeah. You know what? I've interviewed a lot of good people, but I've also edited a lot of good people. And, you know, I think that by the time I was doing Misbehave, where I was editor in chief, and I really could pull and, you know, I could just decide who would be where, that was a lot of fun. And to this day, it kills me. But I was hamstrung in certain decisions where, like, I really wanted to put Amy Winehouse on the cover, but I wasn't allowed to because she was, quote, rando. And similarly, I wanted to put Gaga on the cover, but she was thought to be a one-hit wonder. And so there are moments that my hands were tied. But more than anything else, I think what's gratifying is to see how celebrity changes over the years. Watching the shape of fame change as technology and social and all that stuff changes has been really interesting.
How do you get from mass appeal to Double XL?
Oh, easy. I know this one. It's my life. So
the R train.
Yeah. Totally. I think it's under construction. So Sasha Jenkins, who at the time was the editorial director, you know, was my boss at Mass Appeal, and Noah Callahan Bever was the editor in chief. Noah used to intern for Sasha, and Sasha, Noah, and Elliot Wilson, who at the time was editor in chief, were friends. And when I was working at Mass Appeal, I was both the editorial assistant and the office manager at the same time, which then I parlayed into managing editor simply by dint of the fact that, like, the office manager was like, so I could make $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get there at like 9 or 10 in the morning. And this was at the time, this was at Red Hook. So I was living on the Upper East Side. So that was a fucking long commute.
Yeah, did you take a ferry?
I traversed a body of water. No, it was like the train to the bus. And if that bus didn't come, because this is way pre-IKEA, this is way pre all the cute shit that's happening. If your bus didn't come for 20 minutes, you could be standing in the snow for an hour on Smith and Ninth. And so I would basically start my editorial duties at 6 p.m. after basically doing all the office manager stuff, which, if you know, like, Bootleg Magazine, it means I was doing payroll.
Right.
It means I was doing, like, everything. Like, I was proofing. I was, like, making sure that a lot of the changes were inputted. It was just, like, a lot of different
things. How many writers were not happy with payroll?
Well, payroll was cute. It's more just, like, me putting a dream inside an envelope. Sending it away, being like, it's like a bocce. Like, it's like, good wishes. but, yeah, so I actually really learned a lot. And that was really, really gratifying. The reason why I became managing editor is because I was just like, there are no processes here. Let me change all of the processes. Hmm. Yeah.
You being like an Asian woman.
Yeah, I was like a fucking lunatic. Yeah. And so by the time I left, it was like really, really organized. And, you know, Elliot at the time was looking for an editorial assistant. And so I was just like, yes, I would like to make infinitely more money than I am making. And so
you're how old at this point?
I was 24, yeah. So really old by today's standards. Just ancient. A hoary, hoary bitch. And then I went to work for Elliot, and I was with him for 3 years. And he was a very interesting boss. It's funny because sometimes I don't know that I give enough credence to Elliot's role in my career. But, you know, you have to understand, this was at the point where there was so much beef between XXL and The Source. He was about to beat The Source. It wasn't yet. I think it would take, like, the MJ50 cover that happened afterwards, like, all this other stuff. And he was really interesting because I had never met a more competitive person and been close enough to that competitive person to see the cogs turn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a man who... And this was kind of, it's like definitely pre-internet as we know it. He would hunt for so much information. Like, he would read like old, like, Billboard Top 40s books just so he knew the backstory for which samples were being sampled.
Hmm.
So, like, this is a type of mind where whatever you saw in his YN persona in the editorial was like the tip of the iceberg insofar as he had probably read, like, I don't know, like, two books to give you that one stunning, like, parenthetical barb. And I was just like, oh shit, like, that's motivating to me.
Yeah.
I mean, he was also like, he was a lot younger, and so he was a lot shoutier then. You know, and this is before he was married, so he was well shoutier then. But, you know, that was really interesting. And to this day, like, you know, I look at guys like him, I look at guys like Noah, and I'm like, oh, so this is how you stay hungry.
Yeah. So we've only known Elliot, like, he reached out to us right after he left XXL.
Uh-huh.
So we've only known him in this
Rap Radar iteration.
Even before then, but, like, okay. You know, that just post XXL.
Right.
While he was there, and also, like, so the era that we've been in has been internet era. So sure. We don't know that.
You're
like,
I'm actually a hologram.
But we don't know anything with that, like, that tense atmosphere between The Source and XXL.
Sure.
So any party that we've gone to, or listening session or whatever, people mix and they're from competing companies, and it's like, okay.
Oh my God, it was so acrimonious. it was, I was about to say all sorts of stuff. It was bellicose. no, I mean, it was crazy. And a lot of that had to do with, like, Elliot used to, like, carry around. Like, and magazines then were different period anyway. And also the type of business model that Harris, specifically XXL, was that it, you know, it was outselling Rolling Stone on newsstands because so much of it was newsstand-based versus subscription. And I don't know
if... Can you explain, like, what the difference is between those two things for people who don't know?
They're both dead now.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, you know, the sell-through, so the number of issues that the magazine would sell would be disproportionately high on newsstands. So, like, when you see it at Universal News, that's an old-timey storefront that has these things called magazines or, like, newsstands, period. You know, those things would sell out. But it wasn't a lot of people, like people who probably like get the New Yorker where it is subscription based, where it just sort of arrives in your home, like piling up, judging you for not reading its 7,000 word feature.
Right. You're talking right to us right
know,
now. Like.
Totally. I feel your pain. I feel your pain. And so that's an interesting business model because you don't have a safety net. Like each cover has to compel you to buy it in a sea of other magazines. And so that in and of itself tends to sort of skew your thinking into thinking that like everything has to be a single, everything has to be a hit. And so Elle would carry around like printouts of the cover in his pocket and he would just be thinking about like what the cover line should be. He was thinking about like which one was the cover shot. He'd be thinking about like who's going after who. And like, so people would fight for covers and like definitely be like, it's got to be an exclusive, you got to do my cover and that's it, it's got to be like embargoed on either side by this many things, like you can't go back to back. Like it was a blood sport and it was very exciting. And similarly, this is kind of pre-internet in the music heyday too, so I just remember how the immediacy of like, you know, DJ Green Lantern coming out with like a mixtape. And like, so the call and response of people sort of like, and this is like heyday of beef too. Like this is like Irv Gotti. Yeah. Like this is like a crazy time. And so that was really exciting too, because someone would say something and someone would say something else in a retort to it within days. And like back then in Mule and Buggy times, that was like a big deal. That was really fast. And it wasn't something I'd ever seen in any other music genre. You know, and it was really exciting because, like, again, this is pre, like, comments and this, that, and the other, and pre-social. It's like you could talk at famous people and they would talk back to you. That was, like, that blew my mind. I would have, like, it was so, so exciting. And even now, it's just, like, even the energy of something that, like, you know, the Drake Meek Mill shit. It's like people were like, oh, like, freaking out. Like, that happened all the time. And so,
yeah, but Norm Kelly was never jumping in to offer his take.
True. Oh, Twitter. No, and so, like, you have to understand, this is before, and actually a lot of this became illuminated to me as I was, like, traipsing down memory lane with Noah on my podcast earlier this week, but, you know, this was before rap was what it is. So, like,
right, it felt niche.
Yeah, it felt niche as fuck, and a lot of the people who were dealing with each other have been dealing with each other for a really long time. Mm-hmm. You know, literally, like, a lot of people dealing with each other, like, you know, like had relationships and slept together. There's all this shit. Like, and it felt very much yours. And so it felt like a genuine affront with someone you know and who you could touch, like attacking another person who was also in your like fantasy league of like that's right. Very tight knit. And so that obviously ratchets up the ratchetry. No, the sort of pressure and like all of that. And so, yeah, it was like a really wonderful time. And I think that's what made me fall in love with magazines, you know. And it's funny, I was busting down the door of this one place at Condé Nast that called me back after I was at XXL. And they were like, do you want to come be an editorial assistant with us? And it would have been a very sort of, you know, chic situation. Like I would have been drinking like tiny Fiji water bottles and just like throwing them out after one sip. And I was like, I can't because I feel like I'm going to learn more here. You know, coming out of Mass Appeal where, I mean, we would go, this is so old, but we would go to like newsstands and we would just like put all our magazines in front of all the other magazines, you know, and just like cover everything. And like, we would just go do that because, you know, these artifacts existed in real life and it wasn't like the internet. And when I went to launch Misbehave, which was the sister publication to Mass Appeal in 2006. And I definitely applied everything I knew and everything I learned from Mass Appeal and the situation there. And by the situation, I mean the hardship. And I applied it, everything I learned from Elliot, to a magazine that I launched. Like, I put it on my shoulders and I launched it. And I don't think I would have been able to do that had I been an editorial assistant in a big company.
Who was the Benzino to your Elliot Wilson when you were at Misbehave?
You know what? It wasn't a Benzino situation. I would think it's, you know, and it's so dumb because it's like, we hated Nylon for no reason. That was who we hated. But we launched during a time when Jezebel was launching as well. Mm. And so that was really fun. Like, I remember being like, oh, great. It's like women. This is going to be really tight. This is going to be cool. But I think we were just too early. Like, the thing that's crazy to me is that everyone I called, everyone that I, like, you know, anointed as going to be a thing, became a thing. Mm. But I was anywhere from, like, 8 months to 4 years too early, which is useless.
Well, who were you calling?
You know, it's like Amy Winehouse was a big deal. And, you know, I was talking to her publicist in, like, Long Island. And she was, you know, it was just like, that was like her U.S. person. And Lily Allen we were very early with. And, like, you know, even like the new rave, like Cassette Playa, like all those people we were very early with. And yeah, it was too niche and too early. And I remember even, like, this is really dumb, but like, we all know who Amber Heard is now because she married Johnny Depp. I put her on a cover like a trillion years ago. And I remember it really well. And I would say this to all the publicists because I would fly myself to LA and just start tap dancing because, like, no, like, IDPR and like all these, like, and CAA and all these places didn't obviously want to give us any covers. But I was just like, all the crazy chicks who usually get the men's magazine covers, who need to stop alienating their lady, like, core fan base, they need to do our cover.
Right.
Because, like, we weren't into pretty. We weren't into perfect. We were into, like, a little unhinged. We were into a little, like, Scandal or Salish. And that was our lane. And I remember looking
Which, generally, by the way, was also ahead of your time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, and I remember, and another thing that was a big deal is, like, people would ask me, what kind of tone do you want? I was just like, I need you to sound exactly like me, which at the time was because I was editing everything and I had four pseudonyms and, like, you know, it was a bit crazy, but I was like, and I want you to talk from the first person. For a lot of writers, that was crazy. And, like, for internet, it's obviously, like, what everybody does now.
Yeah, you could, like, you would kill on First We Feast now.
Exactly. No, it's like, and so I was just like, I want you to put me there when you're interviewing someone. And, you know, that's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And I remember that was also too early. Like, I would write, like, you know, for the subscription card, I would write so many little jokes all over it. And it was just, like, really important to me that whoever took the time to see that would get it. Like, I would have cover lines like, how to lose 10 pounds instantly. By the way, nobody fucking cares. You know, just like shit like this. Or like, you know, like 16 pant silhouettes for people with cankles. It's like everything was a fake headline because I was just like, women's magazines are so stupid.
Yeah. So then when, like, Jezebel took that and amplified it, did you feel like
all of you were my sons? No, yeah, not at all. Not at all. Because I don't think that it's like necessarily that I am like patient zero for all lady thinking. It's more that, like, I think I was early on a crest that was going to happen. But there are moments where I'm like, you know what? That's kind of me, though. Yeah. And I think that actually, it's funny, and not to take anything away from Lawrence, because I think it's hilarious, but, like, I got a lot of emails being like, are you Fuck Yeah Menswear? And I was like, no. But there have been moments when other people, and they're very, very kind, will give me credence and give me, like, the props for... I was just like, when you talk about fashion like this, where it's polysyllabic Valley Girl shit, but with accuracy, that's definitely you. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Mm. So, yeah, I'm legendary.
How did you get your first piece into the New York Times?
Actually, it was because I was unemployed, like so many people in 2008, 2009.
It was a tough time for all of us.
Yeah, it was. It was crazy. I remember I would go to the unemployment office and I saw a girlfriend of mine who was in the advertising department for a magazine I was working at. And she had a baby pram, like a stroller. And I remember her husband was also in magazine. I was like, damn, it's all the generations are fucked. You know? And we would just laugh because I would consistently see so many of my friends and colleagues in the unemployment office. And that was when Corey Sika and Alec Balk were Alex Balk
mm-hmm. yeah.
were doing the All.
Mm-hmm.
And the All was really, really fun. And it was run out of Corey's house on St. Mark's. And I knew Corey because we share a mutual best friend. We have joint custody. Sara Vilcomerson. And she was, you know, so we'd known each other for a while. And I was like, you need a girl on that site, man. And he was just like, yeah, you be that. And so I would just show up at his house and start blogging, which was the first time I blogged.
And you would do those AIM conversations.
Yeah, totally. And so that was really fun. And I remember they would just smoke indoors. And I was just like, this is crazy. And then Mark Lotto, who is now at Medium and the new Medium, where it's becoming like a agency or something. I don't know. But he was running the op-ed desk at the New York Times. And he was just like, I like what you do. You should do that here. And I was like, cool. And so I met with him.
Were you like, I like the unemployment line?
I know. It's really cozy here. They have snacks.
I meet so many friends here.
I know, totally.
Can you smoke indoors the times?
I know, like, seriously. And so he wanted me to come on and do this series of essays. And that was really great. And I don't know that I knew the magnitude of what that floodlight feels like. But until I was at the All, definitely white people didn't give a shit about what I was doing.
Did you do any writing for Radar before that? Or
no, they asked me to. And I was obsessed.
I did.
Nice!
Yeah.
Which time, though?
Oh, Radar 3, I think.
That was the bullshit time? No, I'm kidding. Yeah. No, I had always wanted... I loved Radar. Radar was great. I mean, any spy fan would love the shit out of Radar. That fucking book. Also, spy. Holy shit. So I wrote 4 essays, and each one came out a week apart. And it would have been really nice if it had all 4 been locked and loaded, but I was writing them as they were being published, and that was crazy. But after that, it was like, everyone's like, oh, we understand what you do now. And so that was really gratifying, and I'm very, very grateful to Lotto. And he, you know, went on to GQ, and I wrote from there. And it's, you know, that's... The other really nice thing about being in the same industry for a long time is that you do get to know everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's worked for us.
Yeah. Well, look, relationships are the thing that, you know, get people by and help people succeed. Your piece, and you know this, one of our favorite pieces is the Mr. Juan piece. The man who helped
moves
you move
me.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, because I move every year like a crazy lady. No, yeah, I mean... New York is great. I have the worst. I don't have like FOMO when it comes to like going out, because I'll see it on Instagram and or Snapchat, and I'm like, that looks tiring. Being upright like that at this time of night, don't be crazy. But I do have FOMO about apartments. Hmm. And so like really though, like when I feel like I'm coming up, I will fucking move.
Well, what's the best place you've lived, you think?
Fuck.
Like section
it's easy,
of town.
Easy.
Texas.
I know, yeah, exactly. I know the best apartment, and our mutual friend Brendan Frederick lives in it now, because
really?
We used to be roommates.
How are you going
to
get him out of it?
I think about it constantly. No,
put
I
him,
mean,
his wife, and his baby out.
I know, totally. It's newborn. And I know it's really close to your new office, but I don't care. I've come for mine. No, so we used to live together on 97. I'm not going to say the actual address,
right,
but
yeah,
it's
yeah.
a very nice apartment. And so that's probably the one that got away. But I moved in and out of there like twice. And
it the area or that specific apartment?
It was the specific apartment. It
okay.
has a huge
because
patio.
You never went outside.
It had a patio. I didn't have to go outside with them. Yeah, with they.
Was it a walk-up or an elevator building? Or
it was a walk-up, but it was only one flight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it was a single unit.
We moved one of our friends into...
You helped move?
We always do.
We yeah.
We're those
such
guys.
Good friends. Yeah,
I'm.
See, we're both Mr. Juan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. See, the thing is, I would never ever ask a friend of mine
really
to move me. Yeah.
Oh, we do that.
That's so yeah. nice.
Well, yeah. you know, we figured like people
we're
help
also,
us.
Also, like
yeah.
the nicest people in New York City.
Well, no, we were the nicest when we moved our friend Bob into his six floor walk up.
Oh my
yeah.
god.
Yeah. And the
yeah. So his neighbor moved in. At the exact same, I know his neighbor was there at the exact same time he was moving in, and so he starts opening his door, and the neighbor says, "You never get used to it."
Ew. I would just burn all the sage while he was standing there. Right. Like, what
it's
the fuck
the opposite
is that?
Of like asking for sugar or something like that. Just terrible.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sixth floor walk-up.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you lived in places like that?
Yes, I have. I've lived in fourth floor walk-ups, fifth floor walk-ups. There, I mean, you don't get used to it. You know what sucks? Actually, the move is that when you get back from a trip and you're holding your luggage at the base of your stairs and you want to kill yourself. Like, but New York's great. Well, I like it here.
You never made... Oh, no, actually, you did make that move to Los Angeles.
I did.
And
I
did you see all of your relatives, your mom's family out there?
I saw them very frequently. They were very happy. Actually, it was the move. I had the plug. So, Koreans, they have like a trillion dry cleaners between them. I got free dry cleaning like a block and a half away from my house.
That's amazing.
In L.A.
In L.A. It was great. Yeah.
You couldn't get that here?
I there's like a special handshake. I don't know if I can pull it off. Yeah, totally. Do you know? I don't know if you know my... no, so... Yeah, that was great. But LA was a trip. I mean, I was there for a year and a half.
You were doing television.
Yes. I was doing... I was writing... I was the writer for a talk show / news show. And that was very interesting. We were daily.
Megan McCain
was on it.
Eddie Wong.
Eddie Wong was on it for a brief tenure and then and then was not on it. But yeah, that was a really interesting time. I think I wrote 138 episodes or something like that, pretty much by myself with a bunch of producers who would like produce their segment where it's just like, here are the elements. But then I would largely write all the words that went with that.
Jesus.
And it was really, really fun too. Cause like news breaks all the time. So when you're in the control room and you have to change copy as you're going, that's like,
that's terrifying.
Terrifying, but it's also really cool.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just like an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, because the other thing about writing, the type of writing that I do with magazines and like, you know, comic books and whatever, it's like, it's so like every day you have homework. You have homework, homework, homework. You got to get home after you do the interview and then you got to transcribe it and then you got to turn it into a thing and then you got to edit it. With this, when by the time you got home, you were done. So that part
that
of
was
it
like
was
a beautiful
like
thing
really
for you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't like LA as a whole. Like, I just, it was really, you know how New York's the best, especially when the weather turns and like a song will come on at the club and like everybody's like so ignorant for like 5 seconds and it doesn't matter how old you are because we're all young inside.
There you go.
Inside,
or dead
inside. Yeah, totally. Like those moments, that sort of like eruption of like jubilation and we're all in this together just can't happen in a place that's so geographically like disparate.
Right.
And also it's like really racially segregated in a way that after a while weirds you out.
Well, where were you living out there?
I was living in the Gramercy of LA, which is, or the Murray Hill of LA, which is...
Park La Brea?
Yes. Yes. Not specifically those apartments, although I wouldn't have been mad about that because it's really close to that health food store, Erewhon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was...
Erewhon is like basically like, it's like pills.
Yeah, totally. It's great. It's like, here's some atomized nutrition. No, and so I was definitely walking distance to the Groves. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
You know what's interesting?
You're so basic.
I'm so basic. I was just like, why is it so loud? Is Kendall doing like a signing around here?
When I went to Syracuse University, and like when I visited
Gorge.
Yeah. They were like, everyone was like, oh, the quad this or the DO. They were, you know, the Daily Orange, they abbreviated it, whatever. Like there were all these things that were like very campus, you know, inside sayings or whatever. And I was like, I will never be the guy who refers to that as the DO. Meanwhile, like I get there and it's like all I say,
yeah,
right?
Fuck your vernacular. Just kidding. Yeah.
And it's the same with the Grove. Like when we first started going out to LA for business, like 7 years ago, I was like, ah, Grove, that's lame. We'll never go to a mall or whatever. Then the more and more we go, it's just like, do you want to stop by the Grove and get something like quickly to eat? And like, easy to walk around and meet someone. And
I got to a point where I'd be like, I need groceries. I'm going to go to that fucking butcher in the Grove. It worked
out.
But
you never did yoga there, did you?
In LA.
The Grove?
Not in the Grove. Okay. I have my special vinyasa flow place that I liked. Because really
we've stopped by on like a Sunday morning and like,
it's like
you
a whole
have
thing.
All
yeah,
the
all
ladies.
Of the
yeah.
sea of women. Yeah, that's a whole thing.
That's so dope.
Yeah, it's so dope.
Did you do juicing?
No, I'm not a juicer. I don't like juice.
Oh, just overall?
At all. Like
too acidic?
Nah, it's more just like, I don't need someone to come in and like pulverize shit for me.
You can do it yourself.
I would rather eat a salad any day.
And did you do all the trails?
No,
or
fuck
the
no.
steps or whatever.
You know what was my? Oh, I did do the steps. But the move is going to Pixie in the Beverly Hills Soul Cycle at 9:30, 10:30, or 11:30 because every bitch in there is from New York. It's like my favorite. It's like all your friends.
It's a new unemployment line.
Totally. On every level. So like that was as much socializing as I did, I think. But now I'm back and it's the best.
Yeah. So overall, like when you would go back and you would see relatives at like, you know, a holiday or whenever you're going home for vacation, what did you tell them over the course of the years that you do? Were you just like, I'm a writer and that's what you guys should
It was actually,
call me?
You know, I decree that you call me a writer. No, I mean, they understand that I write, but it's also like, you know, I have cousins who are so successful in their own fields. Like my cousin, Amy, she is the first one of us to get married. She married a Korean guy. She married a Korean guy who was a doctor. They busted out their first child within that first year, a son. Yeah. And so it was just one of these things where, and she also is like a literal scientist. So I was
she's perfect.
Yeah. So yeah. She was perfect. She's very cute. And like, you know, I have other cousins
you
who are
hate
like,
her.
No, I love her. She's the best. But like,
she's perfect.
Yeah, totally. Throw rocks at this throne like that. No, she and I have a bunch of cousins who are like in her really accomplished lawyers. And so they understand that me and my brother are just kind of like living best life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of vague and fine. But they're extremely supportive of me. My aunts and shit don't read my work. My parents don't read my work. I forbid them.
But they're huge Obi Trice fans.
True.
Yeah. That was a question that I had, though, because like I'm always like hesitant to talk about like some situations that happen when we're at a family function on this, because like people might hear it.
Or yeah,
like
totally.
What if we reference them in something else we do?
I am so like earmuffs psychologically when it comes to my parents or my parents' relatives reading what I do. Because, I mean, I write about, like, weed. I write about doing ecstasy. I write about all this crazy shit.
Yeah, you loved ecstasy.
I really do. It's true. And when you're on it, you love it more. It's so weird. No, and so, like, and I just suspend disbelief or something. And it's so dumb that I just think that they're going to go to the grave not knowing these things about me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also, like, you know, I'm in my 30s and I'm unmarried and I don't have a child. Like, I'm doing really well in so far as disappointing them across the board. So it's just like, it's totally fine.
By the way, we've never shown our mom our video for Girls with the Dirty Souths.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So like, as far as we know, yeah.
Although now, she's going
to
Google the
shit.
Well,
no, she listens to this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think she listens to the podcast, but I do think that she probably like YouTubes us or like Googles us.
Well, she probably has an alert going, guys. Come on.
I don't think she's that advanced.
She's not that savvy.
I know my mom and dad recently learned how to text. They're on KakaoTalk, which is like the messaging app that all Koreans use. And so like, it's really, really cute because they're not demonstrative people. They're kind of, well, hi, they didn't come to my high school reunion. My high school graduation, but now they emoji, and so now I can, like, suffuse so much meaning and emotionalness to what they're saying to me.
Or are you projecting,
no,
like,
it's
whatever
totally,
it means?
No, it's, like, all this pent-up shit I've been holding on to for years. Like, my father would, like, he shakes my hand and says, Mary Choi, when we see each other at the airport after having not seen each other for
Does
several years.
Does he have
years.
A sign?
Yeah, is he your driver?
No, like, but he's just very, like, formal. Like,
yeah.
We're not huggers. He shakes hands. You know, that's where he's at. And so, like, sometimes he'll send me, like, a bear that's just, like, filled with hearts and, like, has, like, hearts in his eyes and, like, you know, all this stuff. And, like, it's, like, the best.
Yo, thank God for emojis.
Thank
yeah,
God
those
for
emojis.
Emojis
sound amazing.
And
I want
also,
that. I want...
not for nothing,
mm-hmm.
I feel like he knows. You know? I feel like he's like, yeah, all the things, here.
A bear with hearts in
yeah.
its eyes.
Not the weird chickadee unicorn that's eating a sandwich. The bear with all the
oh
heart.
He takes the time.
Wait, how do I get on KakaoTalk?
You have to be invited. It's like Raya. No,
can
kidding.
You wait, can you, if you, so Rick Ross has a new thing, rickrossemoji.com.
I saw with the little like Gucci flip-flop with the little
yeah like, and also like ankle. Little Rick Ross like throwing up like
yeah,
pears
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you download that yeah. can you use it in that app, and then can you send that
I don't
to your
know.
Father?
I don't know if you can have the keyboard in there. I don't know.
They
That's
come
an
with their
excellent
own.
Question. Yeah, totally.
I know you can
I don't
do
know
it
about
via
them.
Texting, but I feel like to go to another service.
Yeah, I think they
gotcha,
have like
they
dedicated. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
Because with the emoji packs, it saves it as a like an image file.
Oh,
okay.
So it's not the same thing as
right,
an actual
right.
emoji.
Did
keyboard.
You ever Kimoji?
I did not Kimoji, and I didn't get the Mava emojis either. The Amber.
Wow,
by the way,
neutral.
Yeah.
If I was her. My AKA Amber Rose would be Mother Teresa.
It's pretty good.
How do we get her on the podcast? So you can use that,
and
then
you just have
be
to
like,
think it and believe it.
Oh, yeah, I believe in the secret.
Yeah.
Let's put it on the world, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever, like, just for fun, read any of those books, like The Secret or any of those?
Self-help?
Yeah.
No, but I'm a big fan. You know what? I read the shit out of all the Neil Strauss books. Mm-hmm. Like, The Game, like,
oh, right.
The, mm-hmm. the workbook that accompanied The Game that came later. And I read, you know, I read, like, The Art of... Seduction,
oh.
The Art of War, 48 Laws of Power, like all of those. I worked in hip hop at a specific time in my life. Like, I read all of those. Yeah.
Yo, have you met 50?
Yeah.
He's the most intense person.
We went to, I think he just, you remember when he lived in like Mike Tyson's old house mm-hmm. in Connecticut and yeah. it had like three different discos and like there was one wall, I believe it was in the casino and it had Gucci wallpaper. I met him in his own home.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Were you invited or did you just show up like in the backyard?
I was wearing a cat suit.
I mean, I've seen the cribs, but like, what is it like?
I rappelled down from a skylight. It was cool. Like, he was having an event there. And so he was eating sushi off these three girls. No, I'm kidding.
No.
He doesn't eat sushi. Come on, guys. No. No, he was bussing in a bunch of people. I think he was shooting like an MTV event or something like that. It was a really long time ago.
Yeah.
And Vanessa sat in. It XXL invited me, and so we went, and it was really funny because I remember we walked in and it was just like everybody was like,
Mary's here.
Yeah. And they're like, thank God, this party.
Walked up and shook her hand and said, Mary Choi.
Totally. No, and he was, so all these people were waiting and we were just being bussed in and we didn't really know what was happening. And then I know it sounds like, and then something terrible happened. No. And he was
like
sitting
season two of True Detective.
Yeah. And he was
you and Vanessa.
On every level. No, yeah. That would have been great. We would have killed it. He was sitting there in his own foyer in a hoodie with the hood pulled down low to see how everyone was behaving without knowing that he was there. And I was like, first of all, that's weird.
It's
second
so
of
weird.
All, that's awesome. Like, how did I do? I love all your art. No, and so I felt like that was an intense move. And then his energy, too, like, was also intense. But, yeah, he's kind of amazing.
Are you going to get into scripted TV? Are you getting into long form?
I want to. I mean, I wrote a YA novel that needs to, I mean, I believe my agent's note was like, yeah, you should change all of these things. I was like, okay, so I'm working on that. Good note.
Do you need like a title, like a strong word that's divergent or, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Indignant.
Divergent 3, yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote a pilot for a particular talent in, you know, they just, it's so hard. Like, and at the time they had signed with another company. And so it was like a whole thing where mm-hmm. that person's rights became mired in another thing. I am currently working with, a producer who's amazing and does a lot of like shorter, like sitcom length things. And so we're working together on something new, but you know, it's also with, you know, all the magazine stories that I still have to write and like all, you know, cause like that's the thing about writing things on spec. It's like, you do need to do like one for me, one for lights and housing mm-hmm. and food.
Right.
So yeah, so I still do a lot of magazine covers and I do a lot of magazine writing still, but then it subsidizes these other things that unfortunately do take a lot more time. Like, it does take you like, it's weird. Like, books take a long time to write.
Yeah. Well, so everyone like always seems to ask us because they're like, okay, television or opportunities in that world, mm-hmm. you have to live in Los Angeles. And we're like, well, we're New York guys.
Are you guys staying here? That's
yeah, we're staying
interesting.
Here. And
it's noble.
And but there really isn't.
It's Ronery.
There really is an energy and a, I don't know, something to the city, right?
For sure.
And our everyday lives. And whether that's like because we're not in a car for so long trying to get to someone's place or whatever it is.
No, there is an anesthetized sort of like hermetically sealed quality to LA that after a while started bugging me out. Like I would, you know, after my TV job ended, I started writing other things and I was just like, yo, I might could not have talked to someone today.
Yeah.
And it's like you downgrade the importance of like being able to just go to your bodega.
Totally.
As many times as you want in a day. Because that little frisson of like human interaction just changes your brain.
By the way, I thought about this the other day because like, so I go down to Dunkin' Donuts like pretty much every morning. And all the guys and the girls down there, they all know me and they know my order. And I can just go in and not say anything and they got me, right? What do you do when you run into them around the corner and you're not at Dunkin' Donuts? Like, do you have this relationship with anybody, like...
God, but I'm, like, an awkward mess. So I'm the person who averts their eyes so noisily that, like, they notice and then think I'm a jerk. And then I'm, like, trying to get my phone out just as a decoy. Like, I'm that person. I'm a mess.
Do you do that when you see someone? Like,
who have I seen? The guy who cuts my hair... But
sometimes I feel like it's like, you know, when you don't understand that your teacher can be at the grocery store when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. It's like when you're not in the bodega, like, do they know who you are or do they think that they just went to high school with you? You know what I mean? Right. Like, 'cause you never, I have that thing all the time where I'm like, are you famous? Did I go to school with you? I'm like, no, you do my nails.
See, but like, I'll have conversations with anybody.
Really? That's yeah. So nice. That's like, noble
like,
too.
Yeah. Like,
oh, so wait, going back to your whole thing. So you're doing TV from out here.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you? What I mean, are you filming?
I was actually just reading. I was reading an article in the Times about how filming is coming back to the city because of all these tax breaks and how like
that happens. Everything's coming back. Yeah, I mean, but our thing was also sold as this is a New York City like story. So
also we're fucking lazy. I'm not going to move across the country.
Yeah, I was just going to say we're going to go to Vancouver. Yeah,
great. No, I mean that's nice. Actually, I think that that definitely applies a certain energy to it, and not because I'm that person who needs to be like, oh my god, look.
Can I be on? Yeah, we get it, Mary. Yeah.
No, like, or even like, oh my god, do you know where that street is? It's the aerial view from blah blah blah. It's not that. It's just like. The one thing I will say about LA that is awesome
is that we would get some color.
Yeah. Is that a vein? no, and our friend Eddie Wong said this because he has a place out there too. And he was just like, yo, LA is like rehab. Hmm. And I've repeated this story so many times because there are elements of that to it. And I know you guys don't partake, but... It's like being in study hall for like a year. You know what I mean? You get so much done. You're so prolific because there's so little distraction.
We go to LA for a week at a time, right? Mm-hmm. And since we know we're there for a week at a time, it's like, let's stuff as much in there as possible. So I think like that's our LA experience. We haven't lived there for...
But also, Eddie lives in a place where it is like rehab.
Yeah, it's true. It's very serene and
West
remote.
Side, that's really hard to get to or leave
he's
from.
Like living like further down the coast.
Right. Yeah, but what I'm saying is like you ever like... Did you guys write your first script yet?
We're in the middle of it. It takes a while.
It takes a while.
Yeah.
The weird thing is this part, like when you're actually like greenlit and you're like, oh fuck, I have to write all these things. I swear to you, be up here, but also like if you can grab like 2-3 weeks out in LA, I swear you'll get so much done. It's weird. Hmm. It's like if someone took all the social media apps off your phone. Like it's like you're just efficient because you're... so bored that you're like just cowed into capitulating to the work and then you just fucking do it.
So if you're going to write a book, are you like purposefully going somewhere where you're not going to have cell service and not going to have distractions?
I did the reverse. I like came here to write my book and I would just hold up in my friend's boyfriend's apartment because he was out of town and I just busted it out.
50 Cent?
Yes.
Right by the Gucci ball. Yeah.
Yeah, I did it in his salon. No, and that was good, but like sometimes a change of pace just to get it out is not bad.
For us, like the hip hop community is so vibrant and like in a different, like LA, we've heard that it's very spread out. Like there's
and it's
no...
kind of awesome because in LA you have the luxury of like hanging out. Like I remember, you know, when I did the Earl Sweatshirt cover for Fader, I went to his house and it was just, you know, he's a child, so it's like it's just like blunt guts and like a weird beanbag that's leaking. Like just like mysterious hair but no animal, you know, just that kind of crib. And so like everyone would come over and they would play video games and they would hang out or whatever. And so you have that hangout mentality. And also like weed is plentiful and like everybody's like so faded.
Right.
And that makes a different type of product and it makes a different type of music. And I do think it makes it a little bit more collaborative. And I was interviewing our friend Jenna Wortham when she did that story on Sid the Kid and the internet. And we were just talking sort of offline and she was like, you know, the vibe is really interesting with the way LA people make stuff, especially LA music people, especially LA young music people who are very high. Mm-hmm. And so it is just a different thing. Like,
yeah, we went over to Mac Miller's house when he owned his house. Yeah.
Wait, did you sit in the pool room?
Yes.
With his recording
studio? Oh, yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
The Buddha?
Yeah. And the beanbag, wherever.
Yeah, the beanbag, I too have been in Malcolm's recording studio.
He played us so many records that never came out that had amazing features and...
I feel like,
cool.
You know what? He still makes money. I love his particular trajectory. I love how fucking rich he stays.
Totally.
It's so admirable.
But that house was like a playground for anybody and everybody of a certain age to come through.
But you know what they didn't have?
What's that?
A mailbox.
They did not. Yeah. So
is that baller?
No, I'll tell you why.
So baller.
Oh, you
that
find it.
No. We when we did our first mixtape in 2013, we had these shirts that were Khaled inspired back then.
Yeah.
From We the Best, because he would wear these giant shirts that said like We the Best. Mm-hmm. We made ours OUI. The best, right? And so we ran with that, and we sent T-shirts to certain
That's
people.
That's like a Jeremiah song. Like
now it is. So we sent the T-shirt. We were like, "Hey, can we send one to you?" He's like, "Sure." And Quentin, who's his right hand man, was like, "Yeah, send it here. Cool." And so we did. And then we're like, "You get it yet?" And they're like, "No, we didn't get it yet." Okay, cool. And after a certain period of time, it showed up in our mailbox as return to sender. And I was like, "What happened?" And like, it turned out, they have no mailbox. And he was like, oh, like maybe usually, they just threw it over the...
No, he's like, usually the mailman will throw it over the fence.
That's amazing. But that's like where you're like, oh, so you guys are playing house in a mansion.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
No, I remember I went to Rocky's house, and his house was like great. And it was really, really close to a very Tony area. And same vibe. It's just like everyone was just on his roof. I was just like, this is great. I can interview you, but also everyone shut up.
Yeah. But that really is. So like,
so California's cool. Like if you're trying to quote build fam, you know, I think it would work out for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think it's like it's a very different thing. I think the rap scene there is really, really different.
By the way, I hope on your podcast you have a lot of these guys on there, because they haven't gone through the college experience. Like,
that's true.
Their college experience is Mac Miller's pool, like, you know, room or whatever.
Totally.
Have you ever tried to do any writing post high school back in Texas?
No, I didn't start writing until I essentially launched a magazine.
No, but I mean now. Have you gone home?
Gone back and been like...
I
got
am,
that vibe.
You know what? I really want to do this.
Because I bet it's very specific.
It is very specific. The one project I do want to do is that my mother is my favorite person. Like, I'm obsessed with her. She's, like, really great. I've written about her.
You just won't let her see you.
No, it's true. It's true. I've written about her a lot. And I definitely want... I kind of would love to just record what she says every day for, like, a summer. And also get all her recipes out of, like, just scoop them out of her head so that they don't die with her, because I feel like she has a lot of knowledge in very specific arenas that I would love to preserve. And I mean, do you guys have that where you just like, where you're like, I mean, maybe you guys talk to your parents a lot more, but when you are when you and your parents don't share a mother tongue, and so when one of you have like a proficiency that just like is so like crazy versus the other, it's like we can't ever communicate honestly. Like, I'm always talking to her like I'm a third grader, or she's talking to me like I'm a third grader. So we're missing a lot of nuance. And so there are certain things where, like, one, I want to preserve what she says, and I want to do it and I would love for it to be translated.
I think that is like, that might be a distance thing. Like, with us, like, our mom lives on the east side, and so her being...
As in, of the city?
Of Manhattan. Okay. Yeah.
I love that.
Sorry, of a university city. She goes to the movie theater a lot.
Yeah.
No, she lives on the east side, and so, like, we're able to see her
right, if
very
we have business
often.
There, we can stop by, yeah.
And then, like, also, because our father passed away, what, like, 6 years ago now? Mm-hmm. So then, like, you know, our mom calls us, like, a lot.
Yeah.
And so, in terms of getting knowledge, I wish that I had gotten financial knowledge from dad, like having worked at IBM and Citibank and like being like a very responsible adult. Like, I never got that. I found a paper from like 2007 that he had given me that said like, hey, you need to check this out. And it was like an Roth IRA thing.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
And
nice.
It was like, yeah, like open, like make
Let
sure
me
you
tell
take
you
care
about
this.
How amortizing. Yeah.
And I had
work.
Never opened it until 2016. So like 9 years of me being like, wait, I should probably open this.
I had papers like that, like some sort of like just compilation of tax forms or something, yeah, right? Like a- at the t- at the top shelf of like my bookcase. And one day, like a post-it that was, I guess, attached to one of them just fell down. And all it said was, good luck, love, Dad. And so I take that as like a nice thing. Yeah. But really, it could have been just like, good luck. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. Pal. Yeah, totally. I was like, what if that post-it fluttered down and it said Destiny's Child or whatever? what was like the actual story behind the name of that? It was like, a bookmark stuck in the Bible that she pulled out, and it was like the I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
There's like a weird story behind that, and now I have to Google it.
Yeah, all
I've
I know.
I've been leaving bee and lemon emoji under all of my enemies, hoping that the beehive will just follow my
That's
lead.
That's like the raindrop umbrella.
Yeah. By the way, if you don't have an emoji to represent your album title, are you
what,
really doing?
Did
anything?
We decide what the views? Emoji was it the single eyeball? Is it the looky loo sideways eyeball? Is it the one thing that
I think
looks
he wants it to be the looky loo sideways eyeball? Yeah, the single eyeball.
What about the one that looks like an eyeball but in a thought bubble? That was like kind of like the Illuminati looking.
Wow,
eyeball. I would have picked that one.
I like to think, is there one that's like maybe like the Running Man, and then like you like have like a house.
True.
Do you like the album, by the way?
Actually,
it's only been like a couple days, so.
Well, I can't because PopCon isn't on. I mean, actually, funnily enough, I was confiding to some friends on my way over here. I was late because I was buying a Raf Simons jacket, but I was just like, I have only listened to 2/3 of it, and I feel really guilty. I feel like I'm walking around with like unfinished business, and.
Just say like, oh, like, you know, it's pretty good, but like
it's a little disparate. I feel like it's
yeah,
a little,
it's all
like,
over the place.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. It's kind of, but I really feel like if I sit with it, it will grow on me, much like Auntie, you know.
It's a classic, and/or I have deep problems with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but also it's funny because we are, you know, we're just it's like an embarrassment of riches. It's like, you know, the whole concept of like, what is it, cultural homework or eat your something vegetables, where you have to like learn about like politics and like policy and like whatever. I feel the same way about like just Drake albums. Like, what a time to be alive. You
know? Am I right?
It's like our homework is so entertaining. It's so, so good.
I feel like, yeah, there's just like now Chance the Rapper is putting out a new album. Like, there's just so much and it's hard to keep up.
It's a lot.
It is hard to keep up. Do you feel pressure? Did you watch Lemonade as soon as it was happening on HBO?
I felt there was pressure and we watched it an hour after it aired.
Yeah, well,
fashionably late.
I had a meeting at Rock Nation on Monday and I was like, I can't show up even in that vicinity.
Yeah.
I haven't not done my homework.
Did you sit in the gold couch?
No, I did not. I just, you know, it doesn't look that inviting.
It's pretty cool, though.
It's pretty cool.
Disrespect.
Yeah. By the way, so we share our good friend David Cho.
Yeah.
Lends us, like, Jeff gives him his Netflix, and David gives us his HBO Go.
Go account, nice.
So we turned it on. David texted us and said, have you guys seen it yet? And we're like, we're just tuning in right now. So I start it, and it goes into the song, and like, you know, I know as much as I've sort of like gathered from what was going on online,
right.
And I didn't want to read anything on Twitter
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and have an idea going in, but I had an idea. And so it starts off and it is a song, and I see you know, she's sort of upbeat. Mm-hmm. I feel like she's walking with purpose, and then there's clips from her and Jay and Blue Ivy, mm-hmm. and the whole thing, and everything looks happy, and then it goes, and then it says Lemonade, a film by Beyonce Knowles Carter, and it starts showing the credits, and I was just like, that's a weird opening, and it turns out that like David had just been finishing
it.
Yeah.
I hate that. Are you guys gonna go to Formation?
I think it'd be cool to go. Went to her last show with Jay on the Run
okay.
tour, and I was not impressed.
Also, are we okay. welcome as men?
That's true.
Yeah. Well, I didn't cheat on Beyonce. I think I'm fine.
That's true. You are leaving
right,
lemons and bees.
You
under
are not Becky with a good hair. You're fine.
No. My hair has been shorn by my awful barber.
And if you see him outside, you'll have a word with him.
Punch him in the face.
Mary, thanks so much for coming through.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if they want to find more of these episodes, just like this one, where can they go?
You can go on SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time or on iTunes, A Waste of Time with It's The Real. We're also on Instagram, It's The Real. We're also on Twitter at It's The Real. You can find us on Facebook at It's The Real.
You can. Wait, we should tell the people that if you have an Android phone, you can now go on Google Play and find a waste of time with It's the Real. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's another option too, I feel like.
There's lots of options. If you Google a waste of time with It's the Real, you'll find like all 51 of our episodes out there. Oh, we're getting real close to
a one-year anniversary.
One-year anniversary. The problem is
that for a couple weeks, we put out two episodes in 1 week, which sort of like fucks with the numbers.
So it's somewhere in the vicinity of like May... late May, May 20 something.
Who
so,
knows?
I mean,
just
we should
wait
probably,
for it.
We should probably double check.
Yeah.
Double
if
down.
If you really want to be there for the anniversary, just keep listening. I don't know. It'll show up.
Please go to iTunes, leave a nice review for us. Say a prayer. I don't know. Leave something nice for us there that we can find. A little Easter egg.
Yeah, it's just like the Wailing Wall.
Yes. Yeah. Although, I haven't been to the Wailing Wall, and I'm not sure that this is the case, Jeff, but it sounds like you go there and you take something from them.
No, I think you have to leave it. If you've been to the Wailing Wall, leave a comment on iTunes and let us know how it works, because we don't know and we're bad people.
Listen, go tell a friend about A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, do you have a friend to tell?
Yes, I was going to shout out Julia Rubin, but we already did that in the podcast. So I'm not going to do it for this part. She can also tell a friend, but I was going to say to Emily O'Connor.
Emily O'Connor.
Out in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
She should tell a friend, preferably not her brother Jake.
All right. Well, I'm going to shout out somebody that we mentioned in the podcast, but we didn't mention his full name. Shout out to Bob Blake, who we moved into that sixth floor walk-up. Bob, you listen to the podcast. You're traveling a lot. You have a lot of time. You have a lot of stairs.
Yeah, he's going to like Taipei and stuff.
A lot of stairs up and down to listen to
Chinese
our podcast.
Staircase.
Listen, meet your neighbors. Tell them about A Waste of Time with It's the Real. And we'll probably be back again next week. What do you say?
Yeah, we still have to figure out who we're going to get on the podcast for next week, but we'll do it. We'll do it.
It is our job.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you then.